You're listening to Kizuki, the podcast. I'm Mei Yoshikawa, and I define the Japanese concept of Kizuki as the following. Kizuki. 1. A moment of epiphany, an aha of realization or insight which opens the knower to a new dimension of truth that was formerly unknown. 2. Steps in an incremental growth of awareness, resulting in a movement from ignorance to greater awareness of the bigger picture. A kind of knowing that cannot be undone, that cannot be unrealized. As a longtime yoga and meditation practitioner, a world traveler and curious self-explorer, I'm obsessed with Kizukis. Listen on each week for inspiring and enlightening stories that may just tip you over for your next aha. On this week's episode, devotion. Today I want to talk about devotion, or the Indian word, bhakti. Now, as many of you know, I have been a long-time yoga and meditation practitioner. I started back in 2001, started going to India in 2004, and kept a house in India for some 13 years. And I would spend a considerable amount of time, maybe like 3 or 4 months out of the year in India. And then I would come back to Japan and teach and travel and things. So this time, a lot of my 20s and a good chunk of my early 30s that I spent in India, I also spent immersed in the culture and just getting to know the people. And I saw and experienced many things that you otherwise wouldn't see. And one of them that felt so foreign to me coming from Japan is a devotional practice or a practice of bhakti. So think, you know, Hare Krishna people playing their instruments and singing their song and clapping their hands and chanting the name of Krishna and Rama, the gods that they honor, down the streets or in their home or in their bhajans, these singing gatherings. Or even in America, maybe something that's more familiar is gospel, right? You go to the church, it's a devotional practice, and it can be joyous, it can be bursting with music and song, and people branch out into solos, and there can be dance, and it can be highly expressive. Now, to put things into perspective, I come from a culture where even organized dance and song is very well put together. Like, people don't go and do crazy things or branch out in their own solos. It's typically very together, there's uniformity, and obviously, like, it's dance and song, so there's movement and there's fun. But it's just not as wildly expressive as some of these other cultures in the world. So when I first started learning yoga and I went deep into the philosophy, I learned that in the larger meaning of the word yoga, aside from just a physical stretching practice like many people think of it in the West, there are 4 primary paths to approach the state of yoga, which ultimately points to union, no separation, oneness. And the 4 paths are Raja Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Karma Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga. And so the first one, Raja Yoga, includes all of the yogic so-called practices, like the asana practices, the physical practices, the breathing practices, the focus practices, and it's typically what we think of when we think of yoga. Jnana Yoga is the path of knowledge. So studying the philosophy, studying the ancient texts, and honing in on that to help guide you to further union within yourself. And then karma yoga, I often like to give the example of someone like Mother Teresa, someone who doesn't stop using her hands and her feet to move for God, basically, for humanity as a whole. And finally, bhakti yoga is the path of devotion, opening the heart to enter that oneness, that unity. And actually, in the larger sense of the word yoga and the four paths leading to that state, it is said that bhakti yoga is the layman's path. It's the easiest path to approach the state of yoga because you don't have to study and be super smart. You don't have to go and do any difficult, challenging, extensive practices. And you're not even asked to work with your hands and feet and get things done. You just need to be devoted and have a pure and open heart in the name of the Lord, if you want to put it that way. However, for me, for some reason, it felt foreign to me. I felt like there was a hurdle for me to enter that path of devotion. Now, case in point. So this is what happened in my mid-20s. I was with a friend and he was originally from New York. And I visited New York with him. And this is still in my early years of yoga. Maybe I was like 3 years into the practice or something. And I was curious to visit different studios and experience what yoga was like in New York. And one evening, he said, there's a kirtan going on, which is like a singing form of coming together and celebrating and honoring. It's like a devotional practice of yoga. The people gather and there's typically like a person who leads on the harmonium instrument. Sometimes maybe there's some drums. And people are singing the different mantras and chants to come together for that purpose. So we entered this yoga studio that evening for the kirtan, and there were a lot of people there. I mean, the place was packed, and someone, I don't even remember who it was, but someone was playing the harmonium and singing up front. And maybe he was somewhat of a famous person. Maybe that's why it was so crowded. But as soon as we got there, my friend squiggled his way to the front row and seated himself as close as he can be to the singer and just went all in, like, you know, all of the Indian chants and mantras, just closing his eyes and, you know, swinging his head and letting his body sway to the rhythm and, you know, that whole vibe. Later on in the evening, you know, people are gathering in a circle, like holding their hands, coming together. There's a few tears in the room. And I just felt like an outsider. Do you know what I mean? Like, have you ever been in a room full of people that are so like in it together, especially with music and song? And, you know, when you don't know the dance or when you don't know the words and you just feel like a foreign invader, basically. And, you know, nobody cared if you didn't know the words and the chant, but I just personally wasn't vibing with it at the time, which kind of enhanced my separation in the moment. Ironically, I wasn't in it. I couldn't feel the oneness of the yoga. If anything, I felt like I didn't belong. So as you can imagine, the couple of hours that we spent there for me felt excruciatingly long, but I had to wait till the end. And then, you know, even after it finishes, people are lingering, hanging out, and getting to know each other. And I'm just kind of like squirming and semi-hiding in the corner, thinking to myself, gosh, this bhakti thing, this devotional practice thing is really, really difficult for me. One day maybe I'll get there, but not today. And that experience left a kind of curious hole for me. I knew that the practice of devotion can be so powerful for so many, not just Indian people, right? But I felt firsthand how powerful it can be, and I also felt how I wasn't in it. So this curiosity remained with me many years down the road as I dove into my practice of Raja Yoga and Jnana Yoga, right? I've always been really into studying and learning and taking that approach. And, you know, when the practice of bhakti, devotion, found me again, it was through a back door. It was a very personalized connection for me that I felt my heart open in a way that was very private. I don't know, in some ways, maybe it's somewhat Japanese of me that I could only open my heart inch by inch behind closed doors, so to speak. But it was invited through just little simple things like a favorite tune to a favorite chant, or even a photo of this saint, Sri Ma Anandamayi Ma, that I saw for the first time just sparked such deep love and affinity in me. I would carry her picture with me everywhere I go. And then eventually down the road, of course, you know, giving birth to my children. And now I would say, even through my work, this consistency, persistence, and the way that I keep showing up, as I've spoken about in previous episodes, is a form of devotion. In my case, it's not necessarily with song and dance. But there is a point about the song and dance. There's a lightness to it, a carefreeness to it, and sometimes even a humor to it. And I think it's a terrific reminder, this invitation to open our hearts in devotion, the way that I interpret it now, comes with that lightness. And sometimes it can show its face with a little humor, you know, the ability to look at yourself and say, well, I don't know everything. I don't practice perfectly. I can't even do everything, but I can love wholeheartedly and I'm devoted and I'm here. So, in the sense of, you know, organized religion and even, you know, certain rituals and practices like yoga, essentially it points to a higher power, right? Whether you call it God or the universe or, you know, whatever your term you're familiar with. But I think on a day-to-day level, you can simply say, are you devoted to life? When you wake up in the morning, do you have the ability to not take that for granted and say, thank you, life. I'm alive again. I'm alive today. And I'm devoted to my life. I'm devoted to making the most out of my life. So I feel like this practice of bhakti and devotion is a beautiful thing, and I hope that provides a little hint for you to make your experience today richer and more beautiful. Thank you for listening. Learn more about me and my Kizuki Journaling Meiwai Method at my website, journaling.mae-y.com/en, or find me on Instagram at maeyoshikawa.